This is the State of Things. I'm Phoebe Judge. Mark Twain said, "The fear of death follows from the fear of life. A man who lives fully is prepared to die at any time." But is a full life really preparation for death? For some, death comes suddenly with little to no time for planning or organization, but for most, death is a slower process. And as some approach their final years, many wonder, how do I prepare myself and my family for the end? And how does society understand the physiological, mental, and social dimensions of the dying process? The Orange County Department of Aging is hosting a series of conversations about these difficult topics that continues next Thursday at the Seymour Center in Chapel Hill. Pam Tillett and Ethan Lechner are the organizers of these talks. Pam is a certified information and referral specialist on aging for Orange County. Welcome, Pam.
Welcome to you. Thank you very much for having us today. Well, I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Ethan is a community care and support manager from Chatham County for the Chatham County Council on Aging. Welcome, Ethan.
Hi, thanks. Welcome.
Also joining us is Heather McKay. She's the Director of Disease Management at the Hospice and Palliative Care Center of Alamance Caswell. Welcome, Heather.
Glad to be here.
Pam, can you tell us what made you want to put these discussions together about death and dying?
Yes, I really wanted to see less fear and more love involved in these conversations that I have with seniors and caregivers that I work with every day. I just wanted to have a conversation about a subject that most people really don't want to talk about. We all die, so why can't we talk about it?
Ethan, can you tell us how you and Pam began working on the topics for these discussions about death and dying?
Yeah. So at the time, I was a social work intern at the Department on Aging, and I was kind of finishing up my work there. I'd been doing a lot with dementia and music, and that was wrapping up. And my supervisor, well, Pam was my supervisor. My other supervisor said, "Why don't you and Pam work together on this series of talks about death and dying?" And she knew that Pam and I are both practitioners of meditation, and that we have a kind of interest in death and dying that's, you know, hopefully not about being morbid, but about living mindfully, learning to live with acceptance and ease that helps us to ease towards a dying that is as peaceful as it can be. And also being aware of our death, helping us to live a little bit more meaningfully in our life.
Pam, I was mentioning this, I've been talking about this for a while, this idea that people sometimes tend to talk to the elderly like children, right, with baby gloves. Can you discuss how that interferes with the ability to get things done that will prepare both the caregiver and care recipient for death?
My own parents will be 91. My mom will be 91 tomorrow. Within the next couple of months, my dad will turn 91 as well. And within my own family, let alone listening to people who come and need help from Orange County Department on Aging, they talk to the elderly in a way that's demeaning because they have a moment's hesitation with a thought. And sometimes the aging process just makes it more difficult to talk about things. And you cannot make these decisions for your parents or for your loved ones. You have to make these decisions with them. And you have to have an open heart and the ability to really listen to what they want, because it's about their lives, their legacy.
So knowing this, how do you discuss this with your own parents? How have you implemented this?
Well, with my own parents, this is not something, you know, it's something that we talk about in everyday life. What do they believe? What does their faith say about the end of life? What rituals are important? What's important to them? We talk about things like losing control and practicing sort of the mindful meditation, so when a crisis happens, they'll have some background in practice that they won't react, instead they'll respond. It isn't easy for my parents to be parents of me, because I do talk about this stuff all the time.
They're getting it from all angles.
They're getting it from all angles.
Heather, what are some of the things that people can do to practice mindful acceptance as we approach the end of life?
Well, Ethan and Pam have put their finger right on the crux of the issue, and it's about talking. And talking with your family, talking with your doctor, to be in touch with, you know, what are your choices? What are your options? And how are those valuable, meaningful for you? So getting that conversation started earlier is something that helps people really sort of be in the moment with the decisions and their choices. Approaching it earlier is certainly a technique.
Yeah. So what are some of the unfinished business things that people ignore that prevents them from being prepared for the inevitable?
Well, a lot of the choices around end of life have not just to do with the what folks think of as a good death, but let's change that conversation and talk about living fully all the way to the end. And in that, we're thinking about choices possibly about relocation, choices about who will be the caregivers, where that care will happen, the involvement of our family, of our friends. What's most important to the person? That's unfinished business, because stopping chemotherapy is not the only choice in this issue of living life fully till the very end.
And so what then is the importance of things like advanced directives? What is that and what does it do?
One of the great resources in the Hospice and Palliative Care Organization website, which is a national organization, is a section all about advanced directives. Finding out some of the things that maybe not everybody knows. What's the difference between a living will and your last will and testament? Well, one is a medical advanced directive and the other is a financial form. Do you have both? So looking into a package of advanced directives to make sure that you've identified a healthcare power of attorney. You've identified some of the choices, not just about resuscitation at the end of your life, but what kinds of medical procedures would you find important in some specific scenarios. So looking into a package of advanced directives can start with a quick Google search. It's right at your fingertips at the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization's website.
It seems like it's something that we can do to have control at the end, that you can do before you even maybe you're even thinking about the inevitable, but a way to say, I will have power, I will have control, this is what I want to have happen to me. And in that way, it's the best way we can respect our lives.
If you're like me, you like to have a tool. I like to find the questionnaires, the workbooks that are available today online, even through an organization like Home Care, Home Instead Senior Care. You might find a workbook that outlines a conversation that they call the 40-70 rule. It's when I'm 40 and my parents are 70. It's the perfect time to make sure that all of our loose ends are wrapped up. If you haven't had that conversation, then the 40-70 rule is a good tradition to keep in families. I know it served my parents when my grandmother was getting older and her health was changing. Now that I'm approaching that 40 mark, it's the perfect time for my family to talk about it while my parents are well.
The American Journal of Preventive Medicine did a survey, a study, and they asked almost 8,000 respondents how many had an advanced directive. 26.3% did, which is kind of a shocking number. Ethan, Chatham County provides a support group for caregivers. I assume there are a lot of folks who feel emotionally spent with caring for a dying person and presumably having a job and younger family as well. And this has to be talked about when we talk about elderly parents dying. Who's going to take care of them? Can you speak to some of the concerns of a caregiver?
Yeah. And I had, before I'd started doing as much work with caregiving as I am now, I was doing some bereavement work before, and I discovered how much of a continuum and an overlap there is with caregiving and bereavement, because caregivers are, you know, they're caring for somebody who's alive, but they're also experiencing a whole range of difficult emotions and grief, even, because the person they're caring for, the transitions that they're experiencing are losses. And there's a term that I like, and it's helpful to me to conceptualize the kind of grief that caregivers are experiencing. there's a lot of stress, and you can think of it as ambiguous loss because the person you're caring for is alive. But in many ways, as a caregiver, you've lost the person, or you're losing the person, or you're anticipating losing the person. And so you go through a very complicated pre-grief process. So caregivers do experience a lot of stress, and that's why it's extremely useful. And Pam also runs a caregiver support group out of Orange County. I think that for those who are able to make it, recognize that their caregiver experiencing a lot of challenges, and a support group can be a big help for some of those people.
Yeah, Pam, how can caring for a family member, oftentimes your parents, your mother and your father, so these roles are now completely reversed, affect the relationship?
Well, I have learned so much from these support groups and from the people in these support groups. They're such incredibly wonderful people that can exist in that kind of pain and joy at the same time. And one of the caregivers was telling me about these end-of-life paperwork and things that you have to do when hospice comes in, how important it was to her that her husband, before he transitioned into not being able to make his own decisions, was able to make these decisions, and how important it was that every time someone came into the home and asked the question, she didn't feel that she was answering it. It was, you know, her loved one. And death and dying are difficult enough, but they need to be our personal responsibility to make choices about it. It's the whole reason that I was so interested in doing this was to have a conversation and to have people in Orange County sit down and start talking to each other about these things and taking responsibility for their choices.
Heather, you work in hospice, and I wonder, in that role, how does hospice at times come in and really sometimes start the conversations for the first time that you're having, and in that regard maybe help mend a relationship that's been strained because of a caregiver role?
Not only do I like to have the tools at the tip of my fingers, I also like to have the coaches who can facilitate a difficult choice or transition or chapter of life. And the hospice team can be the perfect coach. Some folks may even wonder, what is hospice? Some folks may think hospice is a place, but hospice is a specialized team of caregivers that are focused on the quality of life for the person who's dying, as well as the support for that family. Now, I also happen to be a dementia care specialist, and Pam and Ethan are talking about family caregivers and the roles that they play, particularly with that population. A family may be dealing with dementia for a decade or longer. Three-quarters of dementia care is delivered by unpaid family caregivers. Hospice is not just for the patient. The hospice benefit extends to the caregivers, not just in medical care for their loved one, but the spiritual, emotional, the bereavement counseling and other therapies available to family members. One thing that I think about when I think about folks dealing as caregivers, the way Ethan has mentioned, that person with dementia can be the caregiver too. I mean, they can be on both sides of the fence. And I'll never forget a family who was in our hospice home in Alamance County. The patient himself had received his hospice benefit. His grown son and grown daughter had been a part of the hospice program for months. They even found themselves in the hospice home, exactly where Daddy wanted to be when he passed. But there was one piece of unfinished business. Mom has dementia and lives in a locked dementia care unit across town. At the end, they didn't know what to do. Should Mom visit? Should they keep her separate? I asked the family in our hospice home, how long have these two been married? I knew the answer, but they smiled every time they said 72 years. I said, go get her.
Yeah.
We facilitated that visit. When she came through the hall in her wheelchair waving, saying, hey, 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 she threw herself on her husband in his bed. We sang. We said favorite prayers. We told the story of how they met. And when she wheeled away, her little cupped hand was waving again. She said, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. So when we talk about all the way through, we mean all the way. And when we talk about the whole family, we mean everybody.
Yeah, I guess the idea here is the takeaways are, why not talk about this stuff? And there is no one exact answer for how one should die. You know, you get the choice here in how you want to die and mm-hmm. and how you want to spend your last days, and that should be remembered. Well, I want to thank you all very much for speaking with me today and talking about this series.
Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity. We hope that people will come out next Thursday at the Seymour Center in Chapel Hill.
Pam Tillett is a certified information and referral specialist on aging for the Orange County Department of Aging. Ethan Lechner is a community care and support manager for the Chatham County Council on Aging. And Heather McKay is the director of disease management at the Hospice and Palliative Care Center of Alamance-Caswell and is participating in one of the talks on March 19th at the Seymour Center in Chapel Hill. You can find out more about this series on death and dying, as well as some information about your area departments of aging and literature about death at our website, stateofthings.org. That's the State of Things for today. The State of Things is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley is the technical director. Jess Clark is our intern. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Phoebe Judge.